Take.
All right. I've been pondering this for a couple of days, and I made the decision that I have been very hard on you the last few classes. It has been quite an intellectual challenge and pretty heavy stuff. So I decided that for tonight, we're going to explore, we're staying on number 7. We're talking about the uniqueness of Moshe's prophecy. But I ended last night with a question as to why was Moshe, or what merit did Moshe have to warrant such a unique status amongst all the prophets that ever were, is, or will ever be. So I want to return to the incident from yesterday when we talked about Moshe's siblings, Aaron and Moshe, who spoke Lashon Hara. They spoke negatively about Moshe, not understanding why his prophecy was different from theirs. And I just want to, again, recap the first few sentences of that incident. It says, Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses regarding the Cushite woman he had married, for he had married a Cushite woman. They said, was it only to Moses that Hashem spoke? Did he not speak to us as well? And Hashem heard. Those are the first two sentences. Then comes the sentence, now the man Moses was exceedingly humble, more than any person on the face of the earth. Seemingly, that has nothing to do with this. And we move back to the story. Hashem said suddenly to Moshe, to Aaron, to Miriam, here's what I want you to do to deal with this. What is the connection between this incident and the Torah's choosing to inform us at this particular juncture about Moshe's humility? Why not in the beginning when we're first introduced to Moshe? Or maybe during his primary role during the giving of the Aseret Hadibra, the Ten Commandments, and the whole Sinai experience. It's for obvious, well, I shouldn't say that. The Torah clearly is trying to emphasize this character trait in reference specifically to this conversation. I would have expected, I mean, if you've ever read a good novel, you're told about the character either in the beginning or at the end as a summary. Not in one incident, do you have what is the summary of Moshe's greatness. And we have to beg this question as to what it is that relates and connects this incident to that piece of information. This is not my question. I found this question, believe it or not, these questions, at what was recorded at a funeral for Rabbi Isser Zalman Meltzer. Rabbi Meltzer was a great leading scholar in Europe who came over. He died in 1953. His son-in-law at his father-in-law's funeral asked this question. And what his answer was, I think, is so beautiful in understanding here. You know, many people are able to hide their greatness and their sterling qualities from the wide world. Not everybody knows about them. You can hide that. Many people can do that. Some are even fortunate that they can manage to hide even from their closest friends. Not everybody knows their sterling qualities. Yes, they're a nice guy, but to the extent, what extent their greatness lies, even their close friends may not be aware. It's almost virtually impossible to hide when it comes to one's character, certainly a good one, from one's closest family members with whom you spend daily life. They see you. They see you in all circumstances. They see you under pressure situations, stressful situations, in a magnanimous mood, in a not a good mood. They get to see you under the microscope. It's very, almost impossible to hide from your closest family members. However, Moshe Rabbeinu was successful, and even from his own brother and sister, who he dealt with on a daily basis. Remember, Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam are the three leaders of the Jewish people at this time. He was able to hide it and was successful. The Torah, therefore, is compelled to share at this point Moshe's true greatness. It's an opportune time to reveal the incredible character and humility. Why? Because his brother and sister didn't even see it. And they started to malign him. What right could he have to separate from his wife? It seems so inappropriate. He's a prophet. We're a prophet. Wouldn't you like to be a prophet too? Right? We all are prophets. Why makes him any different? They didn't understand it. And therefore the Torah feels compelled to tell us specifically during this incident how great Moshe was And what was the basis of it? His humility. No man, that's what the Torah says. Now the man Moses was exceedingly humble, more than any person on the face of the earth. How different it is in the secular world. Politicians, celebrities, wealthy people, everybody's constantly seeking attention and opportunities to show how great they are. Every available microphone, social media platform, even hire PR executives and experts to advance their name and image. Whatever happened to just doing the right thing and letting the only one who cares, or the only one that we should care about knowing, God, who will know anyway? Moshe is a true humble person. No need to call attention to himself, but the realization that the one, capital O, the one who needs to know, doesn't miss a thing, doesn't miss an action, doesn't miss a good word, doesn't miss anything. And therefore, there's no reason to be shouting from the rooftops. This concept of having humility, even in position of greatness, is something that's brought out in the Torah when it comes and talks about the laws regarding a king. A king, the king needs the highest position other than the high priest. The king is obligated, according to the Torah, to keep with him at all times his own personal Torah scroll. He has to keep it with him. The Torah warns us that there are temptations that the king will face. He may want to amass tremendous wealth. He may want to have more than necessary number of wives, horses, just a whole slew of things that he is tempted to have to show his greatness. In fact, King Solomon, David's son, King Solomon, in fact, broke the rules, and it led to his downfall and the ultimate division of the Jewish kingdom. After King Solomon, the kingdom split into two. It's an interesting observation, and it went on for many, many, many years. Part of that downfall was King Solomon not taking advice and not heeding the advice that the Torah tells us about how a king has to be careful. But the key phrase in that entire discussion regarding a king comes as follows. The Torah says, "It shall be with him," referring to that scroll. "He shall read from it all the days of his life, so that he will learn to fear Hashem as God, to observe all the words of this Torah and these decrees to perform them." Here it comes. "So that his heart does not become haughty over his brethren and not turn from the commandment right or left, so that he will prolong years over his kingdom, he and his children among Israel." You know what the big issue here is? Is that he's going to become arrogant. He's going to think, and Rabbi Sachs again points it out so beautifully, these are symptoms. Not having too many, or his wanting to have horses and wives and wealth, are all symptoms of a problem. That he feels superior to his brothers is because he feels that the formula is above people equals above the law. Doesn't work that way from the Torah's perspective. The Torah's insistence on having humility as an essential part of his role as a leader has to be there. It was a foreign concept back in the times of the Torah. Think about it. Every other religion, every other nationality, every other nation, they have statues upon statues. They have so many things that showed the great might of their leaders. You look at the statues of ancient Egypt, Mesopotamia. I found somewhere that it said that they had some statues that were as high as 33 feet tall. You say, well, that's pretty tall. Let me put it in perspective for you. That's twice as tall as the Lincoln Memorial. That's big. Yeah. Moshe? No. You know why he was great? Because he was humble. And you know why he was humble? Because he was great. The two go hand in hand. The Talmud states it very explicitly. The Talmud in Megillah, the tractate Megillah, says, wherever you find greatness, there you find humility. They have to go hand in hand. You know, Rabbi Sachs points this out as well. This is another clear example of where how spirituality makes a difference to the way we act, the way we feel, even the way we think. Because if you believe there's a God in this world, And I am here under, so to say, God's watchful eye. And God's presence we stand. That means we are not the center of our world. Yeah, let me put that in simple terms. If there's a God, God is the center of the world. At best, I can play a role in the world, but I am not the center of it. Now, I want to make very clear. I want to make very important here. Don't mistake humility as being meek or having low self-regard. That is not the case. Humility is simply put, I know that I have talents. I know that I have abilities, but I also recognize that these are God-given talents. It's not all my doing. I was blessed with this. Yes, I worked at it. Yes, I've done my part to perhaps bring them out from what is only potential to actuality, but it is a God-given talent. It is not a matter of, oh, I have no great talents. I'm a nobody. That's not humility. That's foolishness. There's a very, very fine line that needs to be straddled. You know, you find two such examples in the Torah. You find many, but two in particular. Avraham, not a very meek person. He's got the fortitude to stand up against kings. He's got the incredible strength to go up against everybody else's belief in theology. Yet immediately after declaring before God that he considers himself just dust and ashes, he's, I'm just a nothing. I'm in the scope of life, God. What am I? Immediately thereafter, you know the incident regarding the destruction or the potential destruction of the cities of Sodom and Amorah? And what is Avraham's role there? He stands before God and he challenges God. He says, God, that's not just. What if there are righteous people in those cities? A meek, a person like that who doesn't have any self-worth would not have the chutzpah to stand up before God and say, God, that's not just. I thought you were a just God. Don't confuse humility with a lack of self-worth. Similarly, Moshe, urging God to forgive the Jewish people after the sin of the golden calf. I don't think anybody here would have this kind of chutzpah to talk to God. He says, if you're willing to forgive, great. If not, erase me from your book, God. I'm out of here. Really? A guy with no self-worth would go ahead and say something like that? No. That's not what humility is. Humility is an understanding that you're secure enough in yourself, or you know that God has faith in you. I don't need reassurances from anyone else. I don't need to prove myself by showing how smart I am or how gifted or successful. That's not what I need. I recognize that I have talents. I recognize I have abilities. Now it's my responsibility to utilize them. I don't have to prove it to anyone. I don't have to compare myself to anyone and show that I'm better. That doesn't accomplish anything. I wonder what Moshe would say if he lived in our day and age, where it's all about selfies. It's all about Facebook posts of your latest and greatest accomplishment or dish that you made or whatever else we post, just to show everybody, or the most desirable designer label that we need to wear with the label on the outside so that people have to see it. What would Moshe say about that? Rabbi Sachs points out so beautifully that the loss of faith in God, sure, that leads to a more focused on self. Because what's left at the center of our consciousness, if God is taken out of it? Me. That's what's left. And therefore, it is a one-to-one correspondence. The lack of faith in God, the lack of an acknowledgement of God and spirituality in the world, the more the focus becomes you, self. The more you recognize there is a God, and that God does play a role in my life, I realize that me, the self of me, is somewhat less, is not as focused. It's not as central as I thought it once was. Moshe Rabbeinu, who had God in the center of his life, was therefore the most humble person, because it goes together. The more you recognize God in your life, the more you realize you're not the center of it all. And the more humility you have, the more you recognize God, the greater prophet you can become. Because remember, prophecy is working on oneself to become a better person, to become a better conduit for God to have that relationship and communicate with us. That's why Moshe's prophecy was at the highest level. Not it happened to be he was the most humble, oh, by the way. No. The reason why he was able to be the greatest prophet of all time is because he was the most humble of all time. The two are linked, inextricably bound one with the other. Let me finish with a great story. Story about Queen Elizabeth II back in 2005. Great story. You know, they say that when it comes to royalty, what do you call it? It's, you know, they're very exact on time. They come on time and they leave on time. So they tell the story back in January of 2005. It was the 60th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz. As I said, punctuality is the politeness of kings. They come on time and they leave on time. So, as it was with the queen, not on this occasion, unfortunately. Well, fortunately, when the time came for her to leave, she stayed and stayed and stayed. And one of her attendants said he had never known her to linger so long after her scheduled departure time. Who was she meeting with? She was meeting with a group of Holocaust survivors. And she gave each survivor, and it was a large group, her focused, unhurried attention. She stood with each one of them until they had finished telling their own personal stories. One after the other, the survivors were coming to me in a kind of trance, saying, 60 years ago, I didn't know whether I would be alive tomorrow. And wow, here I am today talking to the Queen of England. It brought a kind of blessed closure into deeply lacerated lives. 60 years earlier, they had been treated in Germany, Austria, Poland, and in fact, in most of Europe, as subhuman. Yet now the queen was treating them as if each one of them was a visiting head of state. That's greatness. That's humility. And that's why you can be a queen. That's what it shows. Wherever you see greatness, it has to go hand in hand with humility. The more or the higher up the chain you go in life, don't ever forget the more your responsibility to keep that in check. Don't let it go to your head with the concept that since you're above people, you're a manager, you're a boss of people, you're above the law. That is incorrect. From a Torah perspective, the higher up you go, the more you recognize the talents that you have been blessed with by God. Keep God at the center of your focus. That's the humility that Moshe had. And that's the humility that we should strive for. Questions? I figured something a little lighter, not as heavy as there is a God in this world. Questions? Jeff?
I've noticed that some great rabbis have that feature of humility. And the two of them that I really am most familiar with is Rabbi Kosman, who was very, very learned, but you would never know it by asking him about it.
And, so correct, Jeff. You couldn't. I was debating whether to say that. I can go on and on how right you are. Rabbi Kosman is a perfect. And what was his first name, Jeff?
Moshe.
There you go. I rest my case. Who's the other?
The other one was Rabbi Michael Twersky in Milwaukee.
Sure.
His brother's in Philadelphia. He's a famous Jewish author and psychiatrist.
Yeah, Abraham.
But I was invited, when I first moved to Milwaukee, he invited me to his house. And we went to his house, and there was a line of maybe 60 or 70 people waiting to talk to him. And he gave every one of them as much time as they needed. And he kept me in there listening while he was doing it. But I said, you know, do you always spend hours and hours doing this? And he says, every one of these people deserves to be heard. That was very impressive to me.
It really is. It really is. And it really speaks to the concept of what greatness is. That's really what it is.
Rabbi, hi. Yeah. Just to be clear, because I'm not sure, when you're talking about humility, for the prophets, not Moses, but for the other prophets, is that one of the criteria that they have to have humility? Because remember, we talked about all their criteria.
I don't know if it's listed as one of the criteria, right. But all positive qualities have to be worked on. It wasn't limited to just one. It happens to be that Moshe was the greatest when it came to this attribute of humility. I would say that every prophet, but I would say this is true for every human being. Mm-hmm. We have to work on our humility. You know, it's nice if we have conversations and talk about the greatness of people, but how about us? We're people too. We should be striving for these things. We hold up these people so that we can learn from them and be they're our role models. So yeah, I would say that every prophet, but the truth is it's for every human being, should be working on this trait of humility. And you can go down the whole list. You know, I mean, I started a class in Virginia a couple of months ago. We didn't really get too far because of Corona, but we're going to do it via Zoom. And the whole concept is self-improvement, character. And we explore humility, charity. We look about how being hospitable. We talk about not being angry and patient. We go through different traits that we all need to be working on. My point tonight is that the underlying trait that Moshe excelled in beyond anything else was humility, which is why he achieved what he did.
All right, thank you.
Rabbi T?
Yes, Tehila.
Hi. Going on what you said earlier about like Avraham challenging Hashem, if we always say that like God gives us everything we need in life, how are we able to ask him for anything?
I'm not sure I understand.
Does that make any sense?
I'm not sure. Are you asking if God automatically gives us what we need, why do we ask for it?
I'm saying like we always say like God gave you all the tools that you need in your life to be able to do whatever you have to do. So how can we like, how do we know what we're asking for is good? Like how can we ask for anything from him?
Well, just because you may have been born with the potential to accomplish certain things, which God certainly knows, that doesn't preclude that I have to do my part. I have to actualize it. You know, it's not a great example, but when I was in college, I was going for computer science because I was so convinced that that's the area where my strengths lie. And I was going to be this great computer programmer. And then, I don't know, something clicked in my head and said, maybe education. And of course, I said, nah, that sounds crazy. That's not for me. I'd rather make the millions in computers. Well, I don't, you know, it was clearly a good decision because the thought of me sitting at a cubicle at a desk all day would be just, I'd pull out whatever hair is left. But you still have to ask Hashem to help you actualize it. That's part of the process. So yeah, you may have inborn talents, but you need to work at it and you need to ask God to help you actualize it.
Right. Okay, thank you. That makes a lot of sense. Thank you.
All right. In that case, I wish you each a wonderful, restful Shabbos. We will pick up, God willing, Sunday evening, 4 to 5, and we will start principle number 8, God willing. Have a great Shabbos, and thank you for joining again. Good night, everyone.
Bye.
Everybody.